Scorpions Avenue.
Welcome to Your Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
This came to our attention, and I've been looking forward to having this conversation. So police are specifically targeting gay men in Meridian Hill Park. It's a federal park in D.C. In sex-related sting operations, the Washington Blade recently reported. So apparently, 26 arrests have been made since last August, which were prompted by public complaints about lewd acts that are occurring in the park. And obviously, they involve charges of disorderly conduct, lewd acts, that sort of thing. Are the individuals who are being arrested, are they being entrapped? Because the story and the way the defense attorney for some of these individuals is arguing is that plainclothes officers entice men in Meridian Hill Park for purportedly consensual sexual activity and then proceed to arrest them.
So they're flirting with them.
So they're flirting with them.
The idea of this being a consensual thing.
Yeah.
And then
similar to what
them.
They do with sex workers with prostitution rings.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I was very torn because I'm largely a believer that you know, gay people should be held to the same standard as straight people, and that, you know, we shouldn't, if it's illegal to have sex in a bathroom, then it should be illegal to have sex in a bathroom for gay people too. But it's a slightly different situation because it's a kind of an interesting angle when they aren't setting up cameras outside the bathroom. Obviously, you can't put cameras inside a bathroom. They're not waiting for people who have engaged in acts. They're seemingly, according to this, sort of going out of their way to flirt with people, taunting them with the biological, you know, our strongest impulse, which is procreation.
Yeah.
And then saying, oh, you know, we could do it right here in this bathroom, and then they arrest them.
And the defense attorney said it reminded him of – he said he found it disturbing, this guy, John Albanese. He said, I find it disturbing because it's reminiscent of the Stonewall days when gay men were often the target of police discrimination. The tactics used in these cases just fly in the face of proper police work and should be exposed.
Yeah, and I think one thing that should be added to this, because I agree, it is a torn issue. Like, gay people should be treated the same as straight people when it comes to lewd acts or, like, anything that is against the law publicly.
Right.
But one thing that the article doesn't really talk too much about, but I think anyone who has visited D.C., knows D.C. very well, knows that D.C. is a very much predominantly African-American community. Only a very small part of it are the people who aren't actually living in D.C., who are the white people who come in from constituencies outside of D.C. And this area specifically of D.C. has been historically known for being incredibly diverse. It was one of the most artistically rich, diverse neighborhoods in D.C., where artists, poets, et cetera, black communities, sort of the black renaissance people would come to Washington.
Yeah, this park is called Malcolm X Park.
Exactly. They would come to Washington, D.C., because this was the neighborhood that was open and accepting because D.C. did suffer from segregation. And this park specifically is in a very African. Of course, D.C. is gentrifying in lots of different ways. And this community, I think it's Columbia Hill, Columbia something, is gentrifying in lots of different ways. I have a friend who lives near there. I used to live near there when I lived in D.C. And it is still very predominantly African American. Now, you add that African American into gay men having sex in parks. We know that HIV rates among African American women are particularly high. It is also high amongst African American men. Men, people of color in general, make up the majority of sort of in DC HIV infections. And being queer, men who have sex with men in African American Hispanic communities, often they aren't as prone to being open and able to have an open homosexual lifestyle.
Sex in the park.
At all. They live sort of like a down
low
lifestyle.
They live on the down low, and they are forced sometimes, just like men have been for centuries before this, they are forced to do it in spaces where they can, where like-minded people meet up. And that's
always been the case in the Brambles.
Exactly,
or
yeah. And that's sort of the crux of this, is that if these are predominantly African American or men of color who are having sex with other men in parks, then are they emblematic of a larger issue of homophobia within certain communities that then the police are using to target, using that homophobia within those communities to target only these people in this park who are having sex in public, when in reality, there's shit happening elsewhere in Washington, D.C., near the White House, in the White House, and yet nobody, police aren't focusing their efforts there. They're focusing their efforts in an area that probably does have a high crime rate, sure, but why this park?
I mean, to play devil's advocate, Larry Craig was arrested for this basically the same thing.
No, that was in an airport. Yeah,
that was
yeah.
Like an airport bathroom. Like this feels like a raid.
Yeah, this feels like. I mean, this is clearly an organized effort that this police department is doing for this park.
And I'm sorry.
Like in the United States right now, police have a really great track record of targeting black people, especially black men, and using them to up their arrest rates so that they say they're fighting crime.
Well, I mean, I agree with that sentiment. But I don't know. I mean, does that mean we let this park be a park where people go to fuck?
Did you guys know when George Michael got busted when we were like teenagers or whatever? Did you have any idea what like actually happened?
Yeah.
Did you get it? Because I did not get it.
I got it.
That he got busted by a cop because he was in, I guess, a cruisy public bathroom somewhere, and he probably like flirted with the guy because he thought he was in like a space like this was a cruisy space and got busted, and thus the, you know, humiliation, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, obviously there are rules, but it does feel like the defense attorney said, you know, it feels like a raid. It reminds him of Stonewall. It feels old. It feels kind
targeted.
Of archaic and targeted.
You know?
I think this was an interesting example of, I wonder if a better way to approach the problem would be what they call hostile architecture, which is like building certain structures, certain ways, or putting up cameras to deter certain behavior. Mm. One example that people give is like when you look at a park bench or like a bus stop bench in a city, there's usually an armrest in the middle of it, but that's not really an armrest. It's just designed to keep people from lying down on that park bench.
Oh. Yeah.
So examples like the London is full of this where like, I guess like hundreds of years ago, people would pee in certain areas of the city so frequently that they built, they actually designed buildings such that if someone wanted to pee in this corner, they would put like this, imagine like a Hershey Kiss style cement drop. So if you peed on this If you wanted to pee in that corner, it would roll back onto your legs.
Oh, that's
Does that make
so
sense?
Smart.
It's called hostile architecture. Mm. But I wonder because I obviously agree that the track record with police and men of color and gay people is certainly problematic. But I also just I don't know if it's fair to say, well, then this park is where people are allowed to go and fuck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I will say, like on a personal level, I think there should be more fucking in public. I do. I really think this. I think straight, gay, I think people.
Where?
I mean, I don't think they should be like fucking on the sidewalk or anything, but I do think that if you find a discreet spot in the woods or in a restroom or whatever, and there aren't like, I mean, don't turn it into an orgy. That's when the police should get involved, when it turns into an orgy. But if two dudes, if some dude is fortunate enough to get fucking sucked off in a public bathroom, then that's a great Wednesday night, and B, God bless
them. What if you have to pee?
Pee in the other stall. Pee in the other stall. Poop in the other stall. It's a good show. Like, I know that's funny and all, but I actually do genuinely think that. I think that if more straight people saw queer sexuality and queer sex in life the way we see straight sex in everyday lives, in terms of, you know, I mean, anytime I go to like a straight bar and there's like a dance area and there's that drunk woman and the drunk guy and they're grinding on each other and she has his hand down his pants. Yeah, sure. But they're not getting arrested. And these dudes in this park are. And I get that that's a bar, but in reality, her hand is down his pants. I've seen that at straight bars, and it's like they're essentially doing the exact same thing.
It at gay bars too, though.
Yeah, of course, I've seen it at gay bars too. But they're doing the exact same thing, and nobody's getting arrested there. I don't know why, but whatever. I do think they both should be able to do it because I don't always want to see the straight hand down the pants moment, but I support it because I love love, and I want straight people to see a dude in a park and a glance getting a blowjob because it's like, God bless him, good for him.
I don't know if that would help though.
Yeah, I don't know if
that
would
help our case.
I don't know. I want it to happen more. I see a lot of times.
It just sounds like you want to get blowjobs in parks.
No, I don't. But when I like in San Francisco at Golden Gate Park, I saw someone getting a blowjob once. I remember I was walking through the park because we were working there for AIDS Walk, and I just remember thinking, good for him.
What if you would you have the same reaction if you saw like a lady getting eaten out?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would.
You would.
Because I think it's just so beautiful. I think it's wonderful. I'm so happy for them.
I love the idea of you being like applauding.
I am.
A girl getting you down. I guess I wonder what it does feel archaic, and whether or not it's like they're targeting men of color, which could very easily be the case. I think of like the Brambles, or I think of there's Park or Golden Gate Park, and that's not a thing I think our generation really was a part of per se. It feels like it was before us. Like, yeah. Thinking of that terrifying movie Cruising.
I think it's still happening in non-urban areas.
See, I was surprised by this because I was like, I didn't think that was much of a thing anymore because of apps and stuff. And it is. I mean, it is very scary
it's
to
also
think
like,
that you're in what is known as a cruisy area, and then cops are coming for you.
Yeah, of course.
It's scary.
I don't know. It's tough. I mean, should I feel bad for someone that can't come to terms with their sexuality?
Right. So they'd go to a park.
Such that they feel their only outlet. They can't do something. They can't bring someone back to their place when their wife or girlfriend is gone. They can't rent a hotel room. Obviously, that's pricey. So their only outlet is fucking in a park. Should I feel bad for that person?
But I think you need to empathize with the reasons why that is their only option. And then what can we do then, perhaps as a society, to prevent that from being their only option?
I respect that's a discussion to be had, but like to combat toxic masculinity, right now won't solve the problem of a park that has, I guess, well, say presumably more people than most parks fucking.
Yeah.
Whether that's a fallacy or not, who knows?
I think to like wrap up your point and your point too, I think the idea is like, should police care enough about guys meeting in a park to get off? Should they care enough to do raids on them and arrest them? Or should it just be like, there's bigger fish to fry?
Or is there another way to deal with this problem than luring people with the enticement of sex into a bathroom to
it just
arrest
seems like
them.
A way,
and also
like
don't
Alan
arrest
said.
Them. Give them a ticket. And after so many tickets, whatever. Like we're so quick to. And also, I wonder if it was two young straight college kids, would they get arrested or would they get to stop it?
Would
go
there,
away.
Would there be a raid?
Exactly. Like
them?
I wonder where we would go with that.
It's such a waste of.
It's
I mean,
a
to
waste
me, it
of
like a waste
so
of time,
much money,
resources,
resources
and
yeah.
Like, what? Like, who? I just don't know why anybody cares that much.
Go arrest the dude in the White House.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Not even joking. One of my favorite jokes I ever saw you tell, I only saw you do it once, so you might have to refresh my memory of it, but you told a joke about wedding cake?
Yes.
Mm. How did that go again?
Well, it was
so perfect.
Thank you. I had two jokes that were complaints about the wedding of my friend, noted feminist Lindy West, which is a personal attack. But there was no cake at her wedding.
That's right.
And I was very mad about it. There actually was a very small cake that was just for her and her husband.
What?
And
Excuse me?
Wow. And they had other snacks and stuff.
Their dessert snacks?
Yes. But the argument, and they had a lovely meal. They had a really lovely meal. But the argument was essentially that the acceptability of consuming cake is inversely proportional to the amount of ritual involved. So, like, if you are eating cake because it is Wednesday, that is wrong. If you are eating cake because you are celebrating all of the February birthdays at work, maybe that's okay. Maybe that's the beginning of a problem.
Yeah.
But if you go to watch two people declare their undying love to each other, you're allowed to eat one piece of white cake and no one can look askance at you.
Yeah.
And I was denied that.
Oh, my God. Wait. So, we're with Guy Branum.
Hello.
Comedian.
The great
does everything.
Good to be here.
Wait, so what did you ask if there were snack desserts?
Yeah, like what kind of desserts were there?
I mean, I believe...
Cupcakes, probably. Bullshit cupcakes.
There was like a lovely brown butter Rice Krispie treats.
No.
That's a Disney treat.
That's not a wedding
there were
treat.
There were little brownies. Like it was very cute and charming and delicious, or like... Moshe Kasher and Natasha Leggero had like lovely mini donuts at their wedding.
It's not cake.
I went to 5 weddings that summer, and none of them had cake.
My brother and his sister-in-law, they had hundreds of candy bars. How would you have felt about that?
No, it's still not
if
a cake.
You can buy it at Ralph's.
I loved it.
No, but guys, talking about the presentation of cake to you.
Yeah.
And also just sort of...
The wedding cake usually sucks, too.
No, it
the
doesn't.
The guilt-freeness.
Yes, it does.
I mean, no, it doesn't.
They can be mediocre. I like it as an experience. But
is hard to suck.
Let me say, I think that we exist in a unique time in history, like gay weddings. We're inventing what the rules are. And I deeply hate that we are just doing what they do. And so in that situation, if we do have cultural trends brewing that we are doing something else, if we as a people mandated pie or something like that, I would be fine. It would be a fucking mess, though.
It would be.
But
very sloppy.
I do want to figure out what like our tropes of weddings are.
That's actually interesting. I never considered that. What like we are
so
forging
new.
Ahead.
Yeah.
With gay weddings.
Well, and
only
also
5 years deep or so.
We remake everything. Like we literally recreate everything. But this is the one thing where we're still on best behavior, and it's fucking Edison bulbs and mason jars.
Yeah.
And I have
my
patience.
You were at my buddy's wedding, Matt and Brian, and they for their wedding dessert had banana pudding, which I love, and they came in little mason jars that people could take home with them, which in retrospect is like a cute idea. But you're right, it's not fucking cake.
I mean, the thing is I wouldn't have argued with that.
Yeah.
I would have
that sounds rich.
Like I had a presentation and a moment.
Yes.
You know?
There really was a moment because people were given to them. It's like, take this home with you.
What would you do at your wedding?
Oh, I mean, that's very speculative. I mean, there are a lot of things that have to happen there. But I have my friend Lang Fisher is a respected writer here in Los Angeles, and she performed Gabe Liedman's wedding, and I insisted that she should perform it topless, holding two snakes. Like this one sort of like ancient Greek statue of Athena, or maybe it's like an Etruscan Minerva or something like that. But I was like, that's a fun, I want like a fun evocation of female power at a gay wedding would be fun.
Sure.
But cake wise, I don't know.
I think cake is the one tradition that we should take from straights. Like, cake is so good. I disagree that sometimes cake sucks.
Me
I don't
too.
Think cake ever
I,
sucks.
I love wedding
Even
cakes.
The shittiest cake, I still will eat.
That's
I
like, love a wedding I'm cake. Not, I'm not saying I'm barfing it out, but I've had cake that you're like, this is so generic.
Do you mean wedding cakes?
Yeah, wedding cakes in particular. But I've even had store-bought. In fact, I will say cake is one of the few desserts that I think is worse from a store, and it's almost always better homemade.
Oh, that's an interesting point. That's a very interesting point. I will say homemade cakes are good, but I also say when they have the little plastic containers, like a Ralph's of sheet cake, that's magical.
Magical. That's, magical.
Unbelievable.
Costco sheet cake is the best thing ever.
Yeah. You want a funny thing about Alan is that he grew up with a mother who was a baker.
Yeah. Oh, really?
She had a bakery.
Yeah. I knew that.
Yeah. You didn't know this? This is my favorite. This is my favorite thing about Alan. He had a mother, a lovely mother, who was a baker, and for his birthday, how old were you?
My entire childhood.
He required that she get him a cake that she didn't bake.
That's wonderful. Yeah, right. That's wonderful, because the thing is you know your mom's tricks.
Yeah, like, I know it all.
Like, my mom is a great cook, and she would do wonderful things for us, but I remember coming to a point when I was like 8 or 9 where I was like, not you today, bitch.
There was just something about, like, my mom's cakes, and all my friends were having the store-bought sheet cakes that were just like, make your teeth fall out good, you know? Yeah. And that's all I wanted. Was to be like everyone else. Mm.
To me, it boils down to specifically the icing. I find the icing in store-bought sheet cakes is so...
That's my favorite part.
It's very sweet.
Yeah. It's so sweet, sometimes too sweet, but more importantly, it's usually too light and fluffy with not the proper balance of like richness to sweetness.
Do you guys like a fondant?
No. They're disgusting.
I love fondant.
I've only seen it on the Food Network.
I only like it if it's like in the shape of something that I can then take off a cake that's accurately frosted.
Like, you're the guy that like eats the shit on a cake.
I love it.
It's
like chud.
I think it is disgusting and terrible, except in a Swedish princess cake situation.
That's what I was going to say.
When I'm very excited for it.
What's Swedish?
Bring me the moment.
Part of the princess show. Cake. The stuff I always get at the alcove. The purple cake.
Oh,
that's the best fondant. Yeah. Purple or green?
There's an ad right now that literally they give these girls give their mom princess toast, and she's like, "What the hell is that?" And I'm like, "What the hell is that?
What is that?"
Oh, maybe it's...
Is it like unicorn toast?
Well, it's like, they do it for like her birthday or something. Yeah. Like they may, I don't know. I've seen that commercial. Yeah.
There is like a unicorn market now on food, right? Where it's like unicorn grilled cheese, where it's like all these different colors and unicorn cupcakes and cakes.
There's
where it's
also,
like,
for kids, there's unicorn farts and it's cotton candy.
That's disgusting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's too much.
That's,
taking it too.
I think
you know
adorable.
Who has really good cake that you wouldn't imagine has good cake? Mm. Jack in the Box.
Huh.
Really?
They have a good like chocolate, like cake that you cut into and it melts in the middle and it's just so it's good.
I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
If you don't mind me asking this. I remember once talking to you once about Grindr. I was talking about how frustrating it was and you were like, I love Grindr because all I ever do is I open it up and that's all I have to do to get laid. And I was like, how does that work? And you said, Brent, I'm a fetish.
Did I say that to you?
You did. You said, Brent, I'm a fetish.
I mean, I would never say that is that easy, but I would say that, like, the people who are in the market for me know that they are in the market for me. I have previously asserted that no one has sex with me who doesn't want to be a little bit scared in the process. And yeah, I mean, the thing is that's not always what I'm in the market for. That sounds very blasé for me. But maybe I was just taking a stand to be confrontational with you.
Yeah,
that sounds like me.
Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the thing is I think it can be, because I mean, I live in the middle of West Hollywood, which is, it is the Grand Banks of Grindr.
Yes,
like, you can just pull up nets full of fish in any direction. But it's also, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, have a lot to offer there, and I don't necessarily have as much to offer to many of them. But there's always somebody who's, you know, like, that's my market.
Do you find Grindr as...
Toxic
or confusing or not, or does it bring you agita the way it does me and Brent?
Well, I think you just have to accept at some point in time that, like, we were all raised to hate ourselves, and so we love to splash that hatred onto other people.
Yes.
And just kind of accept that. And I think that, you know, we've gotten very chilled out and, like, better as a people in my 20 years in the game, nearly 20 years now. And, like, however rude someone might be now, or dismissive or whatever, it's not as bad as the things that were getting said to me on gay.com in Minneapolis in 2000. And so it's just sort of, I have to accept that, and like, everybody, I mean, the best thing to me about Los Angeles is that, like, you get to watch super hot people squirm and hate themselves in a way that if they were in, like, Minneapolis or Seattle, they would be able to just be like, yeah, I'm the best.
Right.
And it's like, here, no, you're not. Like, no one is.
There is something fun about L.A. when you see someone. There are so many good-looking people. And, I mean, really, you see these people, you're like, this is the stereotype of L.A. This guy has to be a runway model, but he's next to another guy who's a runway model.
Yeah.
And of course, it makes me feel better because I don't fit in that at all. And
I mean, you have, like, a wonderful little torso, Brent.
Thank you.
I have complimented it on many occasions.
Thank you. But like,
you
yeah,
wear a polo like nobody's business.
Oh, you're a good man. You're a good man. But yeah, there's something kind of cathartic. Yeah. Something kind of cathartic about that. About like people. Hot guys from small towns move to L.A. to feel little.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is there is that interesting mix of, like, dumb people with nothing to offer the world except for their hotness who moved here because that was the only answer, and they will consider themselves actors for 7 years and then go into real estate. And then, like, my friend Matt Wilkes, who is, like, you know, in a relationship with that one Olympic skier.
Well, no longer.
Oh, they broke up?
Yeah.
I'm clearly not that great of a friend. Well, I did learn that they were in a relationship from, like, a clickable Yahoo thing, so it's best that I learned that they had broken up through a podcast. Yes. But, like, when he first moved to West Hollywood, he was talking about how uncomfortable he was wearing a tank top.
Oh,
and I was like, you were Spider-Man on Broadway. Shut up. But it made me feel much better.
Yeah.
Guy, are you like me? Are you the kind of person, do you, what is... Because I've known you for years.
Yes.
And I actually think you and I are similar in a lot of ways. Do you dream of relationships? Do you want to get married? Obviously, you made a joke earlier about, like, not getting married. Like, what is, like...
I am in a relationship for the first time in my life.
Oh, wow. That's great. Cool. Congrats.
And so it's still... I don't know what I'm doing at it, and it is nice as it is. And the thing is, he's, like, he's on the other side of the country. It is not many of the things that many people would expect out of a relationship, but it works for me for now, and that's lovely. But when it does come to, like, the notion of gay marriage came into my world so late,
right?
That it really is, like, can we do that? Like, I thought we were just trying to, like, not be arrested or, like, hated by society. You know, like, you can, it's
not be denied housing,
right?
Hospital visitation rights.
And there are some people, like, my friend Casey Schreiner from Talk Show the Game Show, he came out of the closet and 2 dates later was in a relationship for 3 years and then broke up with that guy and has been in a relationship with the 2 dates later for now 7 years. You know, some people just, like, internalized how relationships work.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think as comedians, we tend to be very solitary.
Yeah.
It is a way of life that people don't understand, and you have to go off and do your own thing a lot. It would be neat, but I don't consider it, like, requisite to a satisfactory life.
Yeah, I've never seen marriage as a direction I'm going towards. And I've been in a relationship with Michael for now almost 2 years now, and, like, I don't care about it. It's, like, not something that I think we need to do.
Well, you were one of the first friends of mine who, like, lived with a boyfriend.
Yeah.
And I was like, even back then, I was so impressed.
Yeah.
That you had done that in college, and I was just very impressed by how adult that was.
Because of cheaper rent.
Well, no, I maintain all gay men in San Francisco who are married are not monogamous. They just can only afford a one bedroom together.
Yeah.
You know?
True. Brother.
I think that's really interesting because I've had the same thought a million times. I'm very solitary. I've never leaned towards relationships. I go on lots of dates. I don't envision myself dying alone, although it's certainly it's possible. I think it could be in the cards. But my biggest challenge has always been, will I be okay with the societal pressure that when I hit a certain age, that I did it wrong.
Uh-huh.
Like, at that point, will it be crushing? Let's say I hit 50, 55 in 30 years from now. Let's say I hit those ages and I'm still single, and people start to look at you like, oh, something went wrong. And I know something didn't go wrong. At least I don't think.
And is it just you thinking that?
And then it could be me thinking. Then again, there also could be something quite wrong with me. Well, I don't know.
Something that bummed.
But like, that's something I've been like really thinking about is like the way you just articulated it very perfectly.
I was going to say something that bums me out is on Drag Race, whenever there's a queen who's like, or a contestant who's like in their late 30s or early 40s, they treat them like they're ancient.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's very true.
And I hadn't noticed that until, like, I guess, Sugarcane?
It's very much it's very much a thing.
It really bummed me out.
Well,
to Ren's point about, turning a certain age.
I mean, age in the gay world is very much a thing.
Any group of 20-year-olds are going to look at a 38-year-old as, like, the ancient person. I think that's probably consistent.
I was in a writer's room for the first time where, like, there were a bunch of very young people, and it was really weird feeling like markedly older in that way.
Yeah.
But I think there are two points of, as time goes on, our divergence from the life of like the heterosexuals amongst us gets like further, because, and there are these people who sort of like create gay versions of heterosexual life. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's weird when like some respected executive producer on Will and Grace pays massive amounts of money to be able to have the semblance of like child rearing and everything like that.
Sure.
But it's like, that's not what we do. Like, I mean, I don't think that gay relationships exist to create children. They exist to create volumes of poetry. But there's also just the thing of like the gay men who were 10 years older than me died.
Yeah.
You know, it was like there just weren't like
I've said that a lot that like our I mean, we're all in our 30s. Our like immediate generation.
I am in my 40s.
Get it, girl. our immediate generation before us, the people that most people would look to for leadership, advice, guidance. A lot of them died.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked at AIDS Walk, a company that produced AIDS Walks. And a lot of the staff were gay men who survived, survived during the 80s and all of that. And watching them navigate life single in their 50s, there was a lot of PTSD from that time. And there was a lot of figuring out what direction to go and where to go and how they exist and how we exist with this younger generation who doesn't have these hangups that they did.
Mm.
And it's really sobering. It's really, there is a lot of like internal queer PTSD that happened because of AIDS. Mm. And I think there's repercussions from that. We're feeling it.
I remember one night I was at Metropolitan, a gay bar in Brooklyn. I was with Kevin Allison, a friend,
podcast guest. Yeah.
And he had a friend there, and Kevin left, and I was just chatting with his friend who was probably maybe late 40s at the time, maybe early 50s or something. And it was just something I had never, for some reason, I'd never contextualized it this way, which is I knew obviously that HIV was a pandemic and still is. But he was the first person to say every single friend of mine from a 5-year period of my life died.
Yeah.
And he was like, it impacted my intimacy for a decade afterwards.
I worked for a guy who he lived, he was a showrunner, and he was in his probably early 50s, and he was like, I didn't have sex for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then following that, as when I knew him, he was rich, he had a very handsome boyfriend, they had a dog, and it's just so fascinating to see like the PTSD that comes from that, and then trying to retrofit heteronormative behavior into his life.
Well, there's the weird way that your options are be very, very good at your job or join a men's choir. Like, and I do think that
it's
there
true.
Is this way,
oh my God, that's
like,
so
that there is this inclination to like overcommit to your professional life because that's the thing where you can have sort of like visible like success and normalcy. But like, Kevin Allison and Scott Thompson, like, there aren't that many gay guys like the, that mm-hmm. age who are around.
Yeah.
And then there aren't that many gay guys in the thing that we do. And so the times that I've been able to be at a bar with Kevin Allison or Scott Thompson is, like, truly magnificent because bitches have some stories.
Yeah.
And also bitches have some perspectives that a lot of people are ready to, like, call out and be aggressive towards. And it's like, they went through a war.
Right.
You don't get to talk to them.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. It is wild. I mean, even to this day, I'm like, sometimes I just want to shake younger people, shake younger gay people by the neck and just be like, read a book.
Well, I mean, I get that. I feel the same way. And I mean, and Michael's like almost 10 years younger than I am. And a lot of his friend group is in, thank you, is also in that age group. Mm. And I relate to them, but I also recognize that, like, they're doing exactly what I was doing, just in a different way 10 years ago.
Right.
In that, like, just figuring out how to exist in a world that tells you you're supposed to be something that you're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how do you respond to that with the tools that you have at your hand? And these, you know, 20-some-year-olds have the internet. They've grew up with social media, and they have that since they were very, very young. We didn't have that, so they have that as a resource to be gay. We didn't quite get that early on. And so it's all, even though, read a book, you get frustrated, it's also like, no, don't read a book. Continue exactly doing what you're doing because, like, in 10 years' time, you're probably going to be awesome.
Yeah. I just mean, when I say read a book, I mean, like, just know who came, know who died.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just know what came before you. That's it.
That's why they listen to podcasts now called You're Making It Worse.
Anyone here watching Love Island UK?
Oh, no. Oh,
I've watched like one episode, but I didn't get into it.
I mean, Elliot, it's the single finest program on television.
Oh, no.
It's just the hottest straight men and then half the hottest straight men, straight women and half plastic surgery monsters dropped into a perfect space to fucking fight.
Are the men in that UK way like tanned and waxed?
Yes.
Yeah. I can't.
Really, no taste for that.
What's that Sussex? East of West of Sussex?
Geordie Shore?
What's that show that men were like that? It was a reality
show. The Only Way
show.
Is Essex.
The Only Way is Essex. Thank you.
What a show.
It's because it's like they look to me like the guys I grew up with on on Long Island.
Well, it is, I don't understand, in a very deep way, I don't understand Long Island. It makes no sense to me.
Well, I couldn't try to explain it to you.
I
either.
Only barely understand New Jersey. But you know Matt Rogers, right?
Yeah, of course.
Like, Matt was so deeply scarred by the masculinity of that place.
Correct.
But I think he has just sort of like a nostalgic taste for, it's weird because these people are like your sexual object and tormentors at the same
that's
time.
Right. Yes, it was so
Yeah, but now
crazy.
We have like straight dudes who recognize that, you know, because as gay acceptance has grown, these straight dudes are all like, oh, now on Instagram, if I do this, gay dudes will like it and spread it. And you have straight dudes, like, in these moments, in these shows and stuff, being like, I'm going to get that queer vote.
Yeah,
you know?
Yep.
And because they know they can, we'll
the splooge
over
the
it.
The Nick Jonas vote.
Yes.
It's one of the most fascinating phenomenons for me is watching people on Instagram, YouTube, who either genuinely don't know that they're doing it, or they're baiting gay people into liking them. My favorite are, I watch a lot of workout vids on YouTube, and and guys will have tens of thousands of viewers, and they genuinely think we're tuning in. They're working out shirtless. They think we're tuning in because we're curious about his diet.
Or they'll put they'll put their CrossFit workout with the reps, and it's like
nobody's reading
is
that.
Tuning in.
Yeah.
I legitimately think they just don't have anything else to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And also learning about the like discipline and dreams of the guys who do workout videos on YouTube is fascinating to me because it's just like, who are these very different people from me?
Yes. Yeah. But also on top of that, who's watching and like taking notes?
Yeah.
Even in their dream where it's
look
like
at his rep,
other guys that look like them are taking notes. It's like, that's
my favorite.
What? Where do you...
If you read the comments, it's always like guys in their 50s to like 70s and it'll have like, you know, like their face and it'll be like, show your legs or looking great, Ken. And you're like, how does Ken not know that these guys aren't going to the gym?
To right.
To me, it is sadder when you have the guys in 50s to 70s who are like, super athletic, brah, or in some way trying to like
gains, brah.
Perform normalcy so that he doesn't understand what's going on. I mean, just be who you are.
Just be who you are.
Also, show your legs. You know?
If that's your thing.
Before you go, I just have one. We Alan and I were talking about this. Brent doesn't care, but we were talking about this thing earlier today. I'm just curious your thoughts on this. So they announced the cast for Dancing with the Stars, which is like,
Dancing with the people in entertainment.
Right. Yeah. And so they put Sean Spicer on the show, which is like, of course they did. And the guy from Queer Eye, Karamo Brown, he said in an interview something like, he's like really nice and he seems like a sweet guy. And
he was like doing a red carpet chat where he was just like, you know, I know it's weird that the guy from Queer Eye and Sean Spicer are getting along, but he's a nice guy. He's a really sweet guy. And then queer sort of Twitter and social media went insane talking about how could he stand there and like try to be on something, A, that's normalizing the Trump administration sort of lying politics, but also how could you say he's a nice guy and yet be this out queer person fighting the Trump administration's policies, when in reality it's like you're just doing this for the money, dude. Let's be real. Celebrity money. Right. Like, that's why you're doing that. And then he then responded to people by blocking sort of like these prominent LGBT voices on Twitter and writers and stuff
really
who criticized him.
That was the surprise. That was the surprise that he fought back a lot.
He fought back at them saying like, I have done more than your dumbass for people of color and queer people in the community, and you're just doing this for attention, when it's like, come on, dude, you're on a show called Queer Eye and you're on now Dancing with the Stars with Sean Spicer. Yeah. Who's doing what for attention? What do you think about?
Yeah, just curious what you think.
I think we pay the people on Queer Eye to be not dangerous in any way, that they are pet homosexuals who prove their value to straight people by providing goods and services.
Pet homosexuals is perfect.
And the thing is like, good for Jonathan Van Ness for how much he's legitimately
exploded,
you know, and like
changed the narrative.
Talk shit and tried to make people think about things that matter without feeling the need to moderate or modulate his presentation of gender or personality. I like that he is who he is. I do think this is a yelling time when we are always telling other people what they did not do enough of. And it's really hard because it is a situation of like, this dude just signed up for Dancing with the Stars. He doesn't have casting power on Dancing with the Stars.
Right. Yeah.
Like, do you want him to quit? Like, would you do that yourself? The thing is, let us all look around ourselves and look at the things that we are complicit in. If nothing else, if you live in the United States, you live on land that was stolen from somebody else, and you have the opportunity to leave. And I'm not saying, like, go back where you came from. I'm literally saying, like,
don't have to put up with it.
You are profiting from, like, theft in a number of ways.
And murder.
Yes, and I don't think... you have to do something that ridiculous. You just need to be aware that like we're all walking a dangerous path and trying to do the best stuff. But it's also like, as Jews, I think you roll it through your head of like, you know, would I have been creeped out by a Jew being on Dancing with the Stars with like Goebbels' wife or something like that? And the answer is I sure as fuck would. And there's always that privilege of, because we are in entertainment and have nice lives, that these people are gonna treat us just as people and not dismiss us the way that they can other people. Like right now, people are being rounded up and put in cages. Yeah. Like, and
literal cages.
Yeah.
In the United States.
And I think that like breaking shit down does need to happen and would be a good thing. But I think it's hard to point at someone else and say, you're not doing enough. Because I always think you should be looking back at yourself, except in egregious situations. Like, I mean, sort of the corollary is, fuck those dudes who are hanging around with Aaron Schock.
Yeah.
Like I have no sympathy for the people who get dragged for Instagramming with Aaron Schock, because it's like, oh, look at us, we are part of the good abs club. And it's like, you know, he did lots of terrible stuff should know better. So
yeah.
Those
the
are my
irony is that Tom Bergeron the host of Dancing with the Stars
didn't want anyone from Trump administration.
Yeah, he put out like a very like
or no any Democrat or Republican actually.
Right, but he put out a very strongly worded statement without actually being too antagonistic, but voicing his disdain, which I thought was pretty cool.
Well, and so did Brown as well for the new season of Queer Eye. He went to producers and said, we don't want to make this, because in the first season they famously did like a Trump thing or something. I don't watch the show because the whole concept of the show pisses me off.
Pet gays?
No, I just, I'm really angry that there isn't a trans person on Queer Eye. I'm really angry about that.
Okay, the fact that we did it this time and there were no women or trans people.
It pisses me off.
When fucking Kristen Kish exists and would be so much better than Anthony is. And also, let's be clear, I am blocked by Anthony.
Yeah.
And I
good for you.
Alan hates
earned that.
His sleepy time gummies.
Sleep
like, forever.
Sorry, I don't mean that.
he is perfectly useless. And I do think there is this. We're a different kind of minority because we're like related to straight people and we're used to safety through docility.
Yeah.
And someone like Anthony, who's just giving straight people everything that they want. Mm-hmm. Oh, look at the pretty little gay boy.
Yeah.
And you get to pet him and he'll never say anything that is bad to you.
Yeah.
Like, it's just fuck you.
Fuck you. It's interesting you say that because we are of sort of all marginalized communities, oftentimes a minority group is defined and impacted in a larger sense by like socioeconomic norms and like certain things that they're regularly in that area of sort of economics. Whereas with gay people, because class is such an important thing in terms of where you stand in society and how you interact with people, gay people, even though it's a marginalized community, they make up from the lowest to the highest, crazy amounts of class differences, which I think creates this fucked up conversation that people can't relate to any. Like, gays can't actually relate with other queer people oftentimes because it's like we have this class system behind us.
But I also think there's a cool way that we do transcend that stuff in ways that other people don't. Mm-hmm. I'm currently watching Four Weddings and a Funeral on Hulu, and they have a very nice interracial, cross-generational, cross-class gay relationship going on in a way that I think is a thing that does happen more with
us. That's interesting, yeah.
Because we only have so many bars, you know?
Right.
We can't segregate ourselves that much. But about like a point you were making about the Bergeron and the politics of it all, I'm so fucking tired of people who are in power and are actively holding us back the minute they leave power, then being all chill. I don't want to hear that Dick Cheney believes in gay marriage now.
Yeah.
I don't fucking want to hear that the dude who argued Bush v. Gore is fighting. I don't want him representing like gay people in front of the Supreme Court. Fuck you, dude. When you had power, you didn't do anything for us.
Yeah. And I don't want to see Sean Spicer dancing. I mean, seriously. He doesn't deserve to like.
He's
dance?
Not a star. Yeah. What defines a star these days?
Oh. Sean Spicer, apparently.
Like he ain't spicing me up.
Guy, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You were the best. And another thing.
So a term that people talk about now that I feel like I see a lot is self-care, the term of self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, do you guys have self-care routines?
Now, this was mental self-care, correct?
No, self-care refers to like what you do, sure, mentally, of course, but also really like how you treat yourself mentally and physically and whatever resources you use to care for yourself, care for
your overall well-being.
Yeah, it's like when you take a step back, and sure, it can be something that is not necessarily mental, but it does give you a mental relaxation that then offers you some solace.
Right.
Do you have self-care routines?
My the only thing I do, and it works like a charm, I go to the gym. If I skip the gym for more than a week, I start crying at the drop of a hat. I become super emotional. I always tell the story. I was on a flight. I had skipped the gym for like 10 days once because I was doing some shows. I was on a flight back from New York to L.A. I was watching the Emmys live on the TV, and they came to the death montage when they go through all the people who died the year before. And I cried so hard.
Wow.
That the woman next to me was like, are you okay?
Oh. Whoa.
And I was like, what is wrong with me? Why am I crying so hard? And I realized it was because I hadn't gone to the gym. And then like the next day I went in the morning and I, instantly felt better.
That's insane. Yeah.
So
that's
basically the only thing. And drinking. I like drinking.
That's not self-care.
No, but I mean, drinking helps. Yeah. Sometimes it's nice. It gives you like a, it's like a way to kind of,
I think it can
view
be
the world,
I mean,
a little,
I don't think
different.
You necessarily mean like drinking to like get
excess.
Drunk.
Right, right. Yeah. That's, yeah, I guess that's different.
Treat yourself to a drink.
Or alcoholism. That's my self-care.
Yeah.
You have self-care.
I do. I like right now, for example, I have this tooth issue happening that during chemo, I lost a lot of teeth and then I had implants and one of the implants is fucked up and it's a huge trigger for me and all that. And it's been a really anxious past few weeks, really, really anxious. And so a lot of times I find my self-care is reading, which is so ridiculous because I do it all the time. But I do find if I get really anxious and confused and overwhelmed and I don't know what's going on, if I just sit down and read a book, it like brings me back to a centered place.
Oh, wow.
I sound so white and dumb.
You can focus on it?
I can.
Yeah.
It does because it allows me.
I can't focus.
It allows
me
to escape in a way that like other things don't, because I get distracted with other things. Like if I'm watching a TV show or if I'm out shopping or whatever, I get distracted and I start obsessing over the thing that I'm anxious about. And so reading somehow brings me back into that moment of just sort of like you're just you and your brain and the story.
Uh-huh.
That's good.
Yeah.
And the Golden Girls, no? Yes or no?
That's a constant self-care.
Yeah, that's part of my self-care.
That's always there, though.
Yeah, for me, self-care is video games. I have...
Oh, that's right.
You bought a Wii.
Video games.
Yeah, and I play video games that are meant for the youngest of children. And really, Kirby, Super Smash, Mario... Yoshi.
He's a gamer.
Yeah.
It brings me so much, it relaxes me.
Yeah.
And it gives me that focus that books do for you.
I really have to love a game.
Like, oh my God.
I really have to love a game for it to be meaningful. I haven't had a game in my life in like 3 or 4 years that I've given two shits about. And it's a bummer because I love when I get into like an app on my phone, but I really have to like be like, oh, this game is great. This game is so fun. And
yeah, the
I haven't
game,
had one.
The gaming element of it is like, it's not that the game means anything to me. It's that it's like, it focuses me on something so silly.
Yeah.
But it's great. And I will say the Golden Girls. I mean,
self-care really is about focus.
Yeah.
It's about taking your focus away from everything else that is distracting you and maybe giving you stress and focusing on that one thing that brings you joy.
Yeah.
Booze.
For me, I mean, I also consider sound.
True crime.
There is something about true crime that's so odd in that it is oddly soothing. You're like,
it is.
What is it about hearing a story about this guy getting like ripped to pieces or something?
Yeah.
Well, that's my favorite thing
about... Or someone disappear. I go to sleep to true crime.
That's my favorite thing about you two and Michael as well. The three of you guys find such soothing... You find such soothing comfort in the most like violent, gory
details. It's funny. Michael makes me try. I'm more than Michael because Michael makes... He's like, it's too serious. Turn it off. Like, after a while, he has to turn it off, whereas I'm just like, I could go all night.
More blood.
Yeah.
For me, it's stupid video games. I like candles now. And
you like candles?
Yeah, I like
candles. Like, do you look at the candle and then say, like, you know, Namyo Horen Gekyo?
No, I like scents. I just like I like a masculine scent, a tobacco, a cedar, a pine wood.
You put him on? I feel like Ellie puts him on with nipple clamps. I'm not kidding.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your aunt say about something she heard on today's podcast?
I just Googled Michael Hoffman, you're a perv.
She Googled him. She's not going to find the porn star. I'm telling you, it's going to be like a podiatrist.
Oh, no. If you Google Michael Hoffman, you find the porn star.
Or Michael Hoffman XXX.
Yeah, certainly that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My Aunt Joanne would probably just... say something to me about having cake with fondant at my inevitable wedding. Mine. Alan, what about Aunt Anne?
Aunt Anne would say, your Uncle Ray and I once did something that could have gotten us arrested.
In a park. Thanks for listening. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Alan Scott.
Star Brands Audio, a podcast, a podcast network.